Today is Friday, March 26th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Adofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden says U.S. will not meet withdrawal deadline from Afghanistan.
How and in what circumstances do we meet that agreement to leave? How's that done? But we are not staying a long time.
Also, EU proposes COVID health passport to boost tourism.
There is little hope here that the European Commission's proposal for COVID passports could rescue the industry this summer.
Plus, NASA readies first ever flight on another planet. These stories and more are next. In his first formal news conference Thursday, President Joe Biden faced tough questioning about the surge of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border and announced that the United States will not meet its May 1st deadline to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. White House correspondent Patsy Widaskuwara has this story.
Immigration was a major focus in President Joe Biden's news conference, the first one since he came into office. Biden rejected the perception that he is seen as soft on the issue, prompting the surge of Central American migrants crossing into the U.S. from Mexico.
That's why they're coming, because no, Biden's a good guy. Truth of the matter is, nothing has changed. As many people came, 28% increase in children to the border in my administration, 31%. In the last year of in 2019, before the pandemic, in the Trump administration.
Earlier this week, Biden appointed Vice President Kamala Harris to lead efforts to address root causes of the migrant surge. On the foreign policy front, the president announced the United States is unlikely to meet its May 1st deadline to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. He did not offer a firm timeline.
How and in what circumstances do we meet that agreement that was made by President Trump to leave under a deal that looks like it's not being able to be worked out to begin with? How's that done? But we are not staying a long time.
With the Afghan conflict escalating in recent years, the announcement was not a surprise to some observers.
But the fact was that when the Biden administration took place, we had made essentially zero progress, both in ending the fighting, which had grown more intense, in defining a single aspect of the peace process.
The U.S. leader also addressed North Korea's recent launch of two short-range ballistic missiles off its east coast, calling it a violation of a United Nations resolution.
There will be responses if they choose to escalate. We will respond accordingly. But I'm also prepared for some form of diplomacy.
President Biden also said he will work with allies to insist that his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping follows international rules.
Well, I've told him in person on several occasions that we're not looking for confrontation, although we know there will be steep, steep competition.
I thought his discussion of China focused on something that really will be a shift, moving away from simply confrontation in trade and a military buildup to some kind of relationship which could possibly bound the competition.
The president also announced he would double his vaccine goals to 200 million doses in his first 100 days and that he expects to seek a second term in 2024 with Vice President Kamala Harris again as his running mate.
But folks, I'm going.
He spent just over an hour fielding tough questions. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Unaccompanied minors continue to stream across the U.S.-Mexico border, the only migrant group that Biden administration is allowing to remain in the U.S. VOA's Aline Barros reports the influx has overwhelmed an immigration system struggling to comply with strict requirements for housing and processing children.
16-year-old Jose Luis was reunited with his parents in the United States after taking a plane, then a bus, and finally walking across the border from Mexico into the U.S. His journey began in Saraguro, Ecuador. Like tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors, he made the perilous trek with no one to guide or protect him.
Meeting my mother and my father was the best thing that happened to me today.
He was 3 years old when his parents left Ecuador to immigrate to the United States, leaving Jose Luis with his grandparents.
When you reunite a parent with a child, it is the best feeling that one can feel because of the happiness we can only feel with our parents, because they're the ones who gave you your life. They're the ones who support you to move forward no matter what.
Unaccompanied minors are the only category of migrants currently allowed to seek asylum in the United States. Tens of thousands have crossed the U.S.-Mexico border since the beginning of the year. Many say they're fleeing crime and violence and hope for a safer, more prosperous life. For now, they're overwhelming federal holding facilities. U.S. authorities are required to treat unaccompanied minors, some just toddlers, differently than adults or families. The Biden administration has struggled to comply with a three-day limit for holding them in adult detention facilities. Aline Barros, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. Treasury Department issued new sanctions Thursday, imposing penalties on two companies with ties to Myanmar's military. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, U.S. lawmakers are calling for more sanctions against oil and gas companies to help prevent a civil war in Myanmar.
Demonstrators out again in the streets in Myanmar Thursday as the U.S. imposes new penalties against the military for the February 1st coup. Atul Kashyap at the U.S. Department of State.
We impose sanctions on the two largest military-owned conglomerates, Myanmar Economic Corporation, MEC, and Myanmar Economic Holdings Limited, MEL, which will directly target the junta's revenue streams and personal fortunes, and demonstrates that we will continue to impose costs until the junta removes its stranglehold on democracy.
Earlier this week, a 7-year-old girl shot when soldiers broke into her home in Mandalay. She was one of 286 people local activist groups estimate have been killed by the military since the coup. And the conflict is escalating, experts warn U.S. lawmakers. UN Special Rapporteur on Myanmar, Tom Andrews.
There is a growing pressure on the opposition leadership to defend the people of Burma by taking up arms against the Burmese military. I understand the pull to go down this path, but I believe that such a path would lead to a disastrous outcome for the people of Burma, with untold numbers of civilians caught in a protracted, bloody civil war.
Possible options to avoid that civil war include targeted sanctions against oil and gas companies. Democratic Senator Ed Markey.
More must be done to deny the army its economic lifeline and to deny it the weapons of war.
And the situation on the ground cannot change, lawmakers said, without international cooperation. Republican Senator Mitt Romney.
There's almost no sanction that we're going to put in place that's going to change the Burmese military from the course they're on. But China has the capacity to do that, maybe India to a lesser extent, but China certainly does.
This week, the Myanmar military released 600 of the nearly 3,000 detained protesters. But de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other members of the civilian government are still detained, while journalists are repressed. Scott Busby at the U.S. State Department.
We are doing all we can to support independent journalism within Burma. The junta also continues to restrict access to the internet and online communication tools. Days after the coup, for instance, the military ordered internet service providers to block access to Facebook, Wikipedia, Twitter, and Instagram.
U.S. officials told lawmakers Thursday they had also redirected nearly $42 million in assistance to ensure American aid benefits the Burmese people instead of the military. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
China sanctioned organizations and individuals in the United Kingdom on Friday over what it called, quote, lies and disinformation about Xinjiang, days after Britain imposed sanctions for human rights abuses in the Western Chinese region. Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters reports.
China has slapped sanctions on British individuals and organizations it accuses of spreading lies and disinformation about Xinjiang. The Conservative Party lawmaker Ian Duncan Smith was one of 9 individuals targeted, as well as the Newcastle academic Joe Smith Finley. They and their immediate families are now barred from entering China, and Chinese citizens cannot do business with them. The move is a retaliation to a set of sanctions imposed on Beijing this week by the United States, European Union, Britain, and Canada. They accuse Beijing of human rights violations against the Uyghur Muslim minority in Xinjiang. Activists and UN rights experts say at least 1 million Muslims have been detained in camps there. China is accused of using torture, forced labor, and sterilizations. It has repeatedly denied all accusations of abuse and says its camps offer vocational training and are needed to fight extremism. In a statement, China's foreign ministry said, quote, China is firmly determined to safeguard its national sovereignty, security, and development interests, and warns the UK side not to go further down the wrong path. Beijing has also imposed sanctions on members of the European Parliament.
That's Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. Turkey raised the issue of Uyghur Muslims during talks with China's foreign minister in Ankara on Thursday. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu said as hundreds of Uyghurs protested the treatment of their ethnic kin in China. Edward Boran of Reuters reports.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi met President Tayyip Erdogan as around 1,000 protesters gathered in Istanbul, chanting dictator China and stop Uyghur genocide closed the camps. Some waved blue and white flags of the independence movement of East Turkestan, the name by which the movement refers to Xinjiang.
We are here because of the freedom of Eastern Turkestan for asking Chinese government to close the camps, stop genocide against Uyghurs.
China approved an extradition treaty with Turkey in December. With the deal awaiting ratification by Ankara's parliament, activists among some 40,000 Uyghurs living in Turkey have stepped up efforts to highlight their plight, holding regular protests in Ankara and Istanbul. Turkey's foreign minister, Mevlut Cavusoglu, who has denied that the extradition accord would lead to Uyghurs being sent back to China, said after meeting Wang, he'd conveyed, quote, our sensitivity and thoughts on Uyghur Turks. He added that Ankara and Beijing would enhance cooperation against the COVID-19 pandemic and on vaccines. Uyghurs' worries have been fueled by Ankara's dependence on China for COVID-19 vaccines, having received 15 million doses from Sinovac Biotech and ordered tens of millions more.
That's Edward Boran of Reuters. Nearly 150 people have been killed in a series of attacks in southwestern Niger in the past week. Gunmen on motorbikes killed 137 people during coordinated raids on villages on Sunday. Reuters reports another 10 people killed in raids Wednesday. What's behind this latest violence? And what's needed to bring it under control? To find out, VOA's Jason Patenkin reached out to Nadia Adam in Bamako, Mali. Adam is a Sahel expert and a researcher with the South African-based Institute for Security Studies.
Well, these regions are already vulnerable as they share borders with Mali and Burkina Faso, who have already been experiencing targeted attacks against civilians for some time now. One of the reasons we can put forward could be the groups sometimes find themselves in a logic of competition and rivalry. And in Niger, two groups operate mainly in the Tillaberi region, Dejnim, the group of support to Islam and Muslims, as well as the Islamic State in the West Africa province. And these attacks could be a sort of message to mark territory. Another way to explain these attacks could be the fact that when you look at the attack in Tilia, it indicates that cattle were also stolen. And previous research from ISS notes that groups often resort to this strategy to finance their operations. And Niger was also going through a post-election crisis. Everyone was focused on the political situation of the country, and groups, as we've seen, are very opportunistic, and they probably saw all this attention diverted from them as an opportunity to conduct more operations.
You mentioned two different groups. Is it clear which group was responsible for the most recent attacks?
The attacks have not been claimed by any of the groups, but when we look at the way these attacks were carried, we could think that they were likely perpetrated by the Islamic State-aligned militant group that operates in the country.
And you mentioned they might be trying to mark territory. How do the people living there view these groups? Do they have support from locals, or are they controlling or marking this territory more through force or through fear?
It could be either by threat and fear, by imposing fear on local populations, or by, let's say, aligning with them and showing them that they're here to support and protect them. In this particular case in Niger, if we look at the attack in Tilia, the civilians that were targeted were actually refugees and internally displaced people. If they moved from one place to another, it was probably to get away from this cycle of violence.
That's Nadia Adam, a Sahel expert and a researcher with the South African-based Institute for Security Studies. She spoke with my colleague, Jason Patenkin, from Bamako, Mali. This is the Voice of America. Ethiopia's prime minister says Eritrea has agreed to withdraw its forces from the Tigray region, where witnesses have described them looting, killing and raping civilians. The statement by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's office on Friday comes after intense pressure from the United States and others to address the deadly crisis in Tigray. Abiy's statement after a visit to Eritrea says Ethiopian forces will take over guarding the border areas effective immediately. A giant container ship remains stuck sideways in Egypt's Suez Canal. Authorities are racing to free the vessel and reopen traffic on the crucial east-west waterway for global shipping as international ports prepare for delays if the canal is not freed soon. Authorities say they need to remove thousands of cubic meters of sand to dislodge the vessel. The blockade of the canal has caused headaches for global trade. Around 10% of world trade flows through the canal, which is particularly crucial for the transport of oil. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The World Health Organization reports that African continent is lagging in a race to vaccinate its people against the deadly coronavirus. WHO says Africa needs far greater access to COVID-19 vaccines to reach its goal of vaccinating 60% of the population by June 2022. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Africa received its first delivery of vaccines from the COVAX vaccine sharing facility a month ago. Health officials say this has kick-started robust vaccination campaigns throughout much of the continent. Richard Mahigo is an immunization and vaccine development program coordinator at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. He says 32 countries currently are vaccinating high-risk groups against COVID-19. So far, he notes, nearly 7.7 million doses have been administered.
This is indeed a good start, even if the continent has received only limited doses and much later than other regions of the world. The momentum just have started must be kept up to widen the scope of COVID-19 vaccination beyond the high-risk group that have been prioritized by many countries.
Mahigo warns this will not be possible unless vaccine equity becomes a reality. He says it is unfair for some high-income countries to vaccinate their entire populations while ignoring the needs of poorer nations. WHO estimates Africa will need nearly 1.5 billion vaccine doses to protect 60% of the continent's 1.2 billion population by June 2022. Another challenge facing Africa is the new coronavirus mutant strains. Mahigo says at least 15 African countries have reported the presence of variant strains. He says it is important to monitor the evolution of the new strains and to maintain public health measures such as masks and social distancing.
All the measures that were proven really effective in preventing the transmission should continue to be done. By increasing the vaccination capacity, we will put less pressure on the virus and avoid its mutation, as we have heard. So this is the only solution that we can have to get out of this situation.
Mahigo says WHO is exploring different ways of boosting the vaccine supply through the COVAX facility. One possible solution, he says, is to collaborate with rich countries and test their willingness to share surplus doses with Africa. Another is to promote technology transfer and reduce intellectual property barriers so vaccines can be produced locally. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In the global race against emerging variants of COVID-19, experts say it's imperative to reach herd immunity quickly by vaccinating as many people as possible. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on the range of vaccines being used in the U.S. and elsewhere.
In the United States, three vaccines are being used: Pfizer-BioNTech, Moderna, and a recent addition from Johnson & Johnson. U.S. health experts say all have been rigorously vetted. There are some differences in delivery and some debate about their efficacy rates. J. Stephen Morrison is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He's the director of the Global Health Policy Center.
It gets very confusing because the J&J, which comes in at 66%, people go, well, that's 66%, whereas Pfizer, Moderna are each 95%. Well, shouldn't I go with Moderna or Pfizer? Then the answer is, well, look, the J&J field trials were done in a different point in time when there were variants. So when you're looking at your top line goal is block severe disease and death. Those three perform exceptionally well. So grab one.
The British-Swedish AstraZeneca vaccine developed with Oxford University researchers has been used worldwide. But recently, some European countries temporarily suspended use of the vaccine over fears of a link to blood clots. After a review last week by the World Health Organization's Vaccine Safety Panel, the vaccine was once again given the go-ahead. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The European Commission's proposal to create a health passport inside the EU during the rest of the pandemic could help summer tourism in southern Europe. But with a slow vaccine rollout and infection rates on the rise, hopes are fading for a recovery anytime soon. Jonathan Speer narrates this report by Alfonso Beto in Barcelona.
Africa received its first delivery of vaccines from the COVAX vaccine sharing facility a month ago. Health officials say this has kick-started robust vaccination campaigns throughout much of the continent. Richard Mahigo is an immunization and vaccine development program coordinator at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. He says 32 countries currently are vaccinating high-risk groups against COVID-19. So far, he notes, nearly 7.7 million doses have been administered.
This is indeed a good start, even if the continent has received only limited doses and much later than other regions of the world. The momentum just have started must be kept up to widen the scope of COVID-19 vaccination beyond the high-risk group that have been prioritized by many countries.
Mahigo warns this will not be possible unless vaccine equity becomes a reality. He says it is unfair for some high-income countries to vaccinate their entire populations while ignoring the needs of poorer nations. WHO estimates Africa will need nearly 1.5 billion vaccine doses to protect 60% of the continent's 1.2 billion population by June 2022. Another challenge facing Africa is the new coronavirus mutant strains. Mahigo says at least 15 African countries have reported the presence of variant strains. He says it is important to monitor the evolution of the new strains and to maintain public health measures such as masks and social distancing.
All the measures that were proven really effective in preventing the transmission should continue to be done. By increasing the vaccination capacity, we will put less pressure on the virus and avoid its mutation, as we have heard. So this is the only solution that we can have to get out of this situation.
Mahigo says WHO is exploring different ways of boosting the vaccine supply through the COVAX facility. One possible solution, he says, is to collaborate with rich countries and test their willingness to share surplus doses with Africa. Another is to promote technology transfer and reduce intellectual property barriers so vaccines can be produced locally. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.